This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
I'd like to start with some acknowledgements that this research has been conducted through collaboration with two major ARC projects, with industry partners being the Department of Environment, Heritage, Water and the Arts and the Northern Territory Bushfires Council. I'd like to also acknowledge the participation of Professor Paul Tayson and Dr. Sally May and their significant contribution through their Picturing Change project, and also Flinders University's Maritime Archaeology Department, Dr. Jennifer McKinnon, who has also worked with us on maritime aspects of the project area. An important aspect for this research project has been the collaboration and participation of local traditional owners from the Namanijbuk clan estate in Arnhem Land. The research area is located in coastal northwestern Arnhem Land in the Goulburn Island region, approximately 400 kilometres east of Darwin. The region consists of several offshore islands, coastal embayments and mangrove estuaries, and Holocene infield bays and swamps, with the sandstone Wellington Range located only 12 kilometres inland from the coast. The maritime borders between Indonesia and Australia have been a source of contention between these two countries for many years, especially since the formation of post-World War II Indonesian state. Although these borders are now governed by international treaties, conventions and national governments, this has not always been the case. The frontier between these nations had previously been negotiated by Indigenous Australians and traditional Indonesian mariners through a means of exchange and understanding of traditional customs and rights to land and sea tenure and reciprocity. The Indonesian mariners in this case are known as the Macassans, denoting the point of origin for many of the crews and the centre of the trepang trade in eastern Indonesia. Our investigation of major trepang processing sites at Anuru Bay and Indigenous archaeological sites in the Wellington Range, hinterland, is revealing a major reorganisation of settlement strategies with significant changes in residential mobility during this contact period. Indigenous coastal communities in Anuru Bay region have displayed a considerable ability to adapt and reorganise local economic and social strategies in response to culture contact generated from the Indonesian trepang industry. We need to briefly discuss the timings of the trepang maritime industry, as this has significant implications in demonstrating whether Indigenous participation in this economy was a rapid change or one of gradual assimilation. Historical evidence suggests that the Indonesian trepang industry existed only from 1720 AD through to 1906, a period less than 200 years. An aspect of this research project has been to compare the historical evidence against the archaeological evidence through the examination of radiocarbon dating from both Indigenous and Macassan archaeological sites. Preliminary results from radiocarbon dating of beeswax over rock art, paintings of Indonesian traditional sailing vessels, has indicated that an image of a prow is likely to be older than 1630 AD, possibly placing the execution of the painting 100 years earlier than the historic accounts of the trepang industry. This has significant implications for the timings of initial culture contact on the shores of Arnhem Land. New dates from the Anuru Bay Macassan trepang processing site have returned uncalibrated dates of 175 and 179 years before present. Although there are problems with the radiocarbon calibration curve for the dates within this age range, it does suggest that the trepang industry at Anuru Bay possibly started around the mid-18th century. Therefore, we propose that there has been a period of culture contact, probably beginning sometime in the 17th century with early scouts or the possibility of Indonesian mariners exploiting other resources, and then the trepang industry at Anuru Bay well underway in the mid-18th century. Mulvaney and Kaminga explained that macassans had a profound impact on coastal Aboriginal societies. There is evidence that adoption of macassan technologies and materials such as tools, iron, glass, and the dugout canoe resulted in an intensification of the exploitation of marine resources. This hypothesis is supported elsewhere in the Arnhem Land region, with ample evidence of a trading relationship that led to changes in languages, travel to Macassar for a number of Aboriginal people, and the establishment of a trading network along the Australian coastline. According to Ian McIntosh, there was a steady exchange of ideas and cultural beliefs as Indigenous communities worked and lived with macassans. Morphy describes the cultural change from macassan interaction with Yolngu people as dynamic, with various social repercussions, and had a deeply influencing impact on art, ceremonial ritual, and song cycles in eastern Arnhem Land. Furthermore, McIntosh has revealed a deep and intricate relationship between macassans and Yolngu, which centred on a place named Dulchi, a place that honours a timeless partnership that crosses international boundaries in eastern Arnhem Land. This relationship was based on notions of treaty, truth, and an ideal that guided cross-cultural interactions and expectations. However, the interaction between Indigenous communities and macassans was not always amicable through the duration of the tree-paying industry. McIntosh attempts to place a chronological context to the Yolngu-macassan interaction during the period from 1800 to 1906 and identifies a period of steady decline in relationships after the massacre at Dulchi. Practices non-conducive to cooperation take place, including the prostitution of women, introduction of alcohol, and violent quarrels with some. However, there are still some levels of cooperation continuing to occur in places. The tree-paying industry was tethered to the complex Southeast Asian economy, driven always by China. Expansion of the tree-paying industry in the 18th century was based on the need to supply growing demand from China, with the industry for the eastern Indonesian archipelago being centralised through the trading port of Macassar. Macassan fleets numbering from 30 to 300 prows would leave for North Australia on the trade winds in the early wet season, travelling via other islands such as Timor. The tree-paying harvest was undertaken during the tropical wet season, a time of storms, monsoon rain, and severe tropical cyclones. Fleets made for areas of the Arnhem Land coast, establishing base processing camps, and would split up to exploit various sections of the coastline. Therefore, macassans needed access to the following: productive tree-paying fields, shore-based processing areas, fresh water, littoral coastal exploitation for various resources and supplies, and safe harbours. There is a significant body of evidence from historic, anthropological, and archaeological sources that illustrate the level of Indigenous participation in the tree-paying industry in Arnhem Land. There are a number of areas that this participation can be considered from an archaeological perspective, namely access to land and sea and the supply to the industry. Access to land and sea was probably the most significant method for participation in the tree-paying industry, which necessitated the need for formalised negotiations with local traditional landowners. As Russell summarises in an analysis of the Macassan Indigenous interaction in relation to the failed Croker Island native title case, the negotiation of access of space was tightly controlled and administered by traditional owners, especially the maintenance of sacred space. It has also been argued that macassans mainly occupied land that could be defended, for example, peninsulas and islands. However, we have found at Anuru Bay and McPherson Point on Goulburn Island extensive Indigenous assemblages which would appear to be contemporaneous with the macassan occupation. Whether this is a result of seasonal occupation differences, i.e. wet season or dry season, we can test through stable oxygen isotope analysis. In the meantime, it is an indicator that the Indigenous community occupied the same space with macassans, which would suggest the relationship must have been, at the very least, amicable. This is significant in comparison with Indigenous occupation at later European settlements or stations, which are generally characterised as on the periphery or out of sight. Another proxy indicator of the level of negotiation for the Macassan occupation can be seen through environmental impact. While investigating paleo-environmental change at Anuru Bay, we found that there was a significant denudation of the surrounding peninsula of its vegetation cover, which resulted in a massive erosional event being found in the nearby mangrove sediment profiles. Testing at the Macassan site revealed massive charcoal and organic content in the sand profiles relating to the trepang processing. This erosional event is likely to have occurred during the Macassan occupation from massive deforestation of the peninsula to fuel the trepang processing fires, which in turn contributed to the rich organic soil profile at the Anuru Bay site. Previously, it had been argued that Macassans had had a relatively benign impact on coastal areas they occupied, leaving behind little evidence of their activities or coming into conflict over Indigenous resources. However, this evidence suggests that such a major environmental impact could not have gone unnoticed by local traditional owners, therefore increasing the risk of potential conflict. I propose that the harvesting of local timber would have also necessitated a similar level of negotiation comparable to the access of trepang fisheries. Therefore, this is an indicator of the many issues that must have continually needed to be renegotiated in the relationship between traditional owners and Macassan captains. Supply to the Macassan industry is an area that is not well documented and probably has the least amount, thanks Ian, of historical evidence. In re-examining the Macassan trepang processing sites of Anuru Bay and Goulburn Island, there is evidence to suggest that Macassans may have been supplied with local resources by traditional owners. A significant amount of shell-midden material has been found at the Anuru Bay Macassan trepang processing site. However, excavation of the Macassan living and processing areas has revealed an extensive deposit of shell-midden material in situ with the Macassan cultural features and levels. There are three hypotheses to explain this presence: that the shell is intermixed from previous Indigenous occupation, the shell is from Indigenous occupation of the site during the dry season, or the shell is from Macassan consumption from supply by Indigenous people during the wet season. It could be argued that a major strength that traditional owners had over the Macassans was their traditional ecological knowledge. Traditional owners can exploit the resources of their local area better than anyone else and be able to do it in a timely and efficient manner. This would mean that Macassan labour for a trepang processing and harvesting would not need to be redirected on provisioning. A working force of 100 to 300 people at Anuru Bay would require significant food and water provisioning. Local traditional owners would have been able to provide an important and essential resource and still maintain traditional skills and commitments without major time and energy compromises. It is the internal changes required in Indigenous society to facilitate the participation in the trepang industry that are perhaps the most significant to this discussion. Currently, 273 Indigenous archaeological sites consisting of rock art, rock shelters, artefact scatters, scarred trees, stone quarries, shell middens and shell scatters have been recorded in the region. Our research in the Wellington Range and associated coastal region has shown significant reorganisation of local residential mobility over the last 250 years, which can be compared against a backdrop of 15,000 years of occupation. Residential mobility is reflected in the occupation of rock shelters and distribution of rock art and material culture. A significant shift occurred to take advantage of the new economy and restructured Indigenous land use in a way that also strengthened traditional practices but created new social capital. Participation in the trepang industry required a major shift of time commitments and labour distribution of Indigenous communities that would normally concentrated on other traditional undertakings. A major departure from earlier occupation of the Wellington Range is reflected in the shift of occupying many sites to a few strategic sites. So in this slide, we see the general distribution of archaeological sites. And in this slide, we see that the withdrawal of people to a few key sites in the area during the last 200 years. With this in mind, we can see in this slide the intensive occupation of the Mallorac rock shelter, with Unit 1 representing the intensive occupation of only 250 years, Unit 2 being the late Holocene, and Unit 3 representing 28,000 years of occupation. Likewise, in Mallorac 4, we see a similar sequence with the intensification of occupation in the contact period in upper levels. And again, similar changes in the occupation of different areas on Goulburn Island occurred with the intensification of occupation of locations where Macassans had established tree-paying processing stations. So in conclusion, within a short period of time, probably in the mid to late 1700s, traditional owners had significantly changed their residential mobility patterns. The contraction of residential mobility probably occurs for several reasons. To carefully control access to Macassans and corridors of movement, locations that are best suited for meeting with other groups to facilitate trade and exchange and other traditional commitments, control the flow of items into the traditional economy, and the introduction of new technologies and materials improve the ability to extract more resources from local environments. I would propose that the changes probably took place very rapidly in response to the Macassan culture contact and resulting participation in the tree-paying industry. If we draw on theories of complexity, the period of equilibrium in Indigenous life preceding Macassan culture contact would have been placed in a short period of instability as Indigenous communities reorganised themselves and their worldview in order to take account of the new reality. Out of this arose a modified social and economic order that would incorporate the new social capital being generated from participation in the Macassan tree-paying industry, thus strengthening traditional lifeways and practices rather than diminishing them. An important emphasis has always been on the two-ways nature of the relationship during successful periods of participation in the tree-paying industry, and Indigenous control of access and negotiation in the industry was probably a unique circumstance in recent Australian history. Thank you very much.
We're running just a little late, so we've got time for a question or two. John.
Thanks, Darryl. I'm really interested in your three hypotheses about trade of shellfish, and I just wonder if you could say a bit more about how you might explore that, particularly in relation to seasonality of contemporary harvesting.
Yeah, sure. I didn't have time here to explain about stable oxygen isotopes. So we can take the Anadara and then test that to see when it was collected. So an oxygen isotope will tell us dry season or wet season, and that's how we can tell whether people are contemporaneous or not, or whether we radiocarbon date it to see whether it's older or contemporaneous.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.